The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, and boy, Marable Homes. Thank you, Marable Homes, our presenting sponsor this year. Unbelievable family-owned custom home builder. And right over on Chiswell. In fact, just last night, driving around, Ed, with my 15-year-old who has her learner's permit now. She's driving me around. And I won't get too specific because people start showing up over there. But, oh, my gosh, right on the street, Chiswell, at the corner of Chiswell in a very prominent street in my neighborhood, gorgeous Marable Homes, a new creation going up. Passionate about what they do, strive to make it a great experience for their clients, and just incredible. That's MarableHomes.com, M-A-R-A-B-L-E. Now, Ed, we are just, as we record this, not long after the game, and I've had an opportunity. You've visited with Jerry. You've heard from Dak, heard from Mike McCarthy. But I found it interesting that Jerry Jones quickly, when asked about Tony Pollard, wanted to set the record straight. Boy, this thing is still all about Zeke, which he quickly said because Pollard was unbelievable. 14 carries, 147 yards, found the end zone time after time.
Three times.
So that is time after time. A breakout effort on the part of Tony Pollard. Ed, the aftermath of this one, this was what people had been wanting to see. What would Pollard be like as the full-on feature back? I would say after 1 week, he looks pretty good.
Well, he was my interview with the player of the game afterward for ESPN. So I interviewed him on the field, and I cited those statistics to him, and I said, "What would you say to people who question your ability, given your running style and the fact you're not a physical player like Ezekiel Elliott as a lead back? What would you say to those people who question your ability to be a starting running back in the NFL?" He said, "I guess I would say check the stats." And he looked up at the scoreboard. And I think it's pretty remarkable what the Cowboys were. First of all, I think it's incredible that Mike McCarthy, who in 13 years in Green Bay, never one time had a team that ranked in the top 10 in rushing attempts, went into this game today without his leading rusher. And the Cowboys were in the top 6 in rushing attempts. And he said during the week, "We are going to run the ball. That's our first priority." And they didn't have Ezekiel Elliott. You questioned whether, you know, it would go well. Talking to the Chicago Bears during the week, including Matt Eberflus, their head coach, I got the very distinct sense that they were afraid of what Kellen Moore might do as a play caller, his unpredictability, if he didn't have half the snaps going to Ezekiel Elliott. Because you know what Zeke's going to do. You don't know what Tony Pollard's going to do. You don't know where he's going to line up because of his versatility. He's got, you know, the speed to break big plays. And so I think the Bears came into the game wary of what they might do, what Kellen Moore might call with Tony Pollard playing most of the snaps at running back. And we saw incredible creativity on the offensive side of the ball for really the first time this year. First time all year, the offense outplays the defense in a game. But it was interesting that to watch after the game, going in the locker room, there's Zeke, you know, he's his locker is next to Dax, and they're engaged in some conversations. And off to the side, three lockers down, Tony Pollard's, you know, been the big media session in a lot right next to Zeke, who seemed not the least bit offended by it, by the way. The two of them have gotten along incredibly well. Now they've gotten along, and Zeke all along has been conceding opportunities and playing time year by year to Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard's become a bigger part at Zeke's expense on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And, but I still think that, you know, Elliott's got a lot to give in terms of being an energy player, creating the right mindset, you know, bringing a mentality of toughness. I think he's an excellent short yardage, goal line, you know, type player, great blitz pickup. I thought one of the things the coaches did really well was not put Tony Pollard in a position where he had to blitz pickup and would be exploited in that role. So I think they're best when they have both players, but I think you can certainly argue that the more opportunities Tony Pollard gets, the more unpredictable and explosive the Cowboys offense tends to be.
Cowboys win 49-29. And Ed, the most important lesson I think he could learn from Zeke is how to hold out. And if I'm if I'm Pollard, I'm holding out before the Packers game. Just go straight into a holdout.
Well, he is in a contract year. He's on the last year of his rookie deal. And it comes at a time when Ezekiel Elliott is about to run out of guaranteed money after this season. Mm. So it's going to be an interesting if things continue along the current path, it's going to be an interesting decision the Cowboys have to make at running back in the offseason.
Yeah, and no matter if it's here or somewhere else, Tony Pollard continues to make himself more and more money in free agency if he's going to get there, and that was certainly the case after today. All right, Frito of Frito Nation Productions, please play the music, sir. Doomsday time in Texas. And Ed and I have had this thing covered from every direction. I thought it was kind of cool, Ed. I was kind of zeroing in on the broadcast today for a couple of reasons. One was Moose was up there, and they had Emmett in the booth with them at one point. I guess this is kind of sometime in the third quarter. And I was kind of excited about that, to see that. And so, much like they did 20 years ago, we had the anniversary of that about 3 days ago, of the 20th anniversary. I was covering that game, Ed, as a young journalist at, golly, I would have been 28, 29 years old at the Dallas Morning News. And you were there, and that was a pretty incredible day. And Moose would have already been, Daryl Johnston was with Fox, and was down on the sideline getting to celebrate with Emmett, and we've seen some footage of that, and then they got to do that today. So that was kind of cool to celebrate Emmett 20 years ago since he broke Walter Payton's record, and to have the Bears in town on the 20th anniversary was pretty cool. Sweetness, we always remember him. Sadly, we lost him a few years ago. But Walter Payton was the record he broke. Ed, when you look back and think back on covering Emmett all those years, and then the fact that it's the 20th anniversary of that record-setting carry against Seattle, what kind of memories did that conjure up in your mind this week, thinking back on all of that?
Well, the first thing that came to mind was that I covered that game for ESPN, and Emmett would not do a sit-down interview with me after the game.
But not so, to make it about yourself.
That was disappointing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was such a bad team. You know, I think it was the last of Dave Campo's 5-11 teams. They went 5-11 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Emmett was sort of the last great player from the offensive side of the ball on those teams that was still out there. And, you know, you look around and you would think, oh, he took the handoff from, you know, Troy Aikman, or he took the handoff from Tony Romo. No, he took the handoff from Chad Hutchinson, because the Cowboys were in that period of time when they didn't have a quarterback and they were trying to find athletes who failed at baseball to come in and play quarterback. And I think Troy Hambrick was on. And it just seemed so wrong that all of the guys in the uniform was celebrating this great historic milestone with Emmitt Smith were guys who were not very good at playing football. Like, they couldn't uphold the standard. But he just outlived everybody else on those teams with his incredible longevity. And, you know, you remember winning the Super Bowls. You remember all the rushing titles that he won and the endless debate about, you know, whether he or Barry Sanders was the best running back in football during that generation. And, you know, I think Emmitt's put it well. I mean, I'm the number one guy. I've got the most yards. I've had the most carries. I've got the most touchdowns. Seems to me I'm the best running back in the history of football. But he doesn't also exclude the possibility that Barry Sanders was a more talented running back than he was. But that's kind of what I remember. It was just ironic how bad those teams were and how nondescript so many of the guys in the offensive huddle were, that he had to celebrate this occasion with. You know, he came off to the sidelines, and I think Moose was doing the game, as you mentioned, for Fox, and he celebrated with Darryl Johnson, who had been so important as a lead blocker on so many of those lead draws that created Emmitt's historic numbers. But that's kind of what I remember. Yeah. And it was interesting that on a day where it was a historic occasion was celebrated, that a running back, and not Ezekiel Elliott, but his replacement, Tony Pollard, in just his fourth start, was the guy who kind of made the difference in the game. And what the Cowboys were able to achieve from that standpoint of, you know, they got to rest Ezekiel Elliott. They basically traded one game for 3 weeks of healing so that he should come back when they resume their season against the Green Bay Packers in a game that might be somewhat important to Mike McCarthy. That he'll come back and should be reasonably healthy and not trying to play through a knee injury like he did almost all of last season. And they did it. They rested Ezekiel Elliott, their lead runner, and they still got this incredible performance, the best ever from Tony Pollard. And they had 200 yards rushing, and they won the game. To accomplish all of those things is a pretty remarkable set of circumstances.
Yes. I think Cowboys fans would be okay with them resting Zeke a couple more games. By the way,
like I said, I think Zeke still has a lot of intangible value and some obvious tangible value in terms of how he runs the ball and where, when he does it, and his ability. I mean, he scored 2 touchdowns last week playing with a bad knee. He had a 20-some yard play. Is he going to have the 50-yard play? I mean, it is kind of interesting that Tony Pollard, even though he's had a minimal role for the most part, never more than really 60-40 split to his detriment with Ezekiel Elliott through the first 3 years of his career. You know, only Emmitt Smith and Tony Dorsett in Cowboys history, the two Hall of Famers, are the only ones who have more 50-yard runs than Tony Pollard.
God, that is hard to believe. Ed, and by the way, I was just sitting here thinking, as you were talking about Emmitt not doing that interview 20 years ago, that we've had every famous Cowboy from that era. Woody's a great friend of ours. We've had Troy on. We've had Michael on. I don't think we've had Emmitt on the podcast. And now I know why you've never reached out to Emmitt, because he refused to do that.
I actually did an event at Neiman Marcus less than a year ago with Emmitt Smith, and he was great.
Okay,
he's fantastic. But in the moment, that 20 years ago, he wasn't in the right frame of mind to do it, or I didn't own the right standing for him to consider doing it. I think he did an interview with Pam Oliver and the Fox number one crew, but he did not do the sit-down interview with me that I had so desperately hoped he would create a sense of heroism on my part and let me share in his incredible day. And you know what? The other thing that I mentioned about how bad those teams were, and I know we want to get to the game today and the significance of it going forward, and we will. But my last thing is, I was reading Calvin Watkins's story, compilation of players' perspective on that particular game and that day. And Darren Woodson, you mentioned Darren Woodson, he had the best quote of all. He said, "I didn't give an F about, no offense, Emmitt, but I didn't give an F about you making history that day. I was too busy trying to make sure the defensive players were showing up on time to meetings and were making practice. And like, I had my hands full just trying to hold everybody on the defensive side of the ball accountable.
I appreciate Woody's candidness on that and can understand that, because those were not good teams. And then they really needed Woody to hang on in those early Parcells days. And sadly, he got an injury, and that took him out. And it also took Roy Williams out, because Roy really kind of needed Darren to hang in there. Okay, those are some old days and good memories to look back on. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Cowboys win 49-29. Ed, this was a weird one, because there was no way any of us thought when the Cowboys were up 28-7 that the Bears look cooked. I mean, you're not looking at the Bears thinking, oh, man, these guys might find their way back in the game. There's no scenario where they get back in that game. And if they didn't make it 28-23, I mean, that's unbelievable how they kind of worked themselves back in the game. We'll get to that and how that sort of came about. I got to say, though, the game plan and everything, I think we need to mention getting to that lead. Just the Dak sort of got to get in this great rhythm. Now, I was looking, he completed so many passes that I kind of thought the yards were going to stack up even more than they did. He ends up with 250 yards passing. He was very accurate, 21 for 27, had one bad interception. We may blame CeeDee Lamb a little bit on that. He didn't exactly make a great play on that ball right there before the half, and that's what led to Chicago kind of getting back in the game. But, Ed, we got to see something we've kind of almost begged the Cowboys to do. And on that first drive, and this may be a harbinger of things to come, how about Dak on the RPO? Finishes off the first drive. Because Pollard's so dangerous, Bears go chasing Pollard, and there goes Dak racing in for, like, the guy's run for, 26 touchdowns in his career now? But that was something we haven't seen in some time, and I think that was kind of a sight for sore eyes for Cowboys fans.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and I brought this up with Dak during the week at his Thursday press conference, that Jerry Jones had said after last week's game that he expected Dak to become a significant part of the run game from the quarterback position, which I thought was an odd thing to say about a quarterback who's had two major injuries costing him significant amounts of games in two of the last three seasons. And he's 29 years old and he's a $40 million quarterback. It seems like that day's passed. Like, yeah, Dak was awesome in 2016 and 2017 as a dual threat quarterback, but is he really still there now given what's happened to him since? And, you know, I asked Dak on Thursday about Jerry's remarks and expectations in that regard. He basically said, hey, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. So, you know, if I have to run to win, for us to win, I'm going to do it. I'm going to show, better judgment, better, risk reward recognition. And then, of course, he gets in the open field on the quarterback sneak. It's supposed to be a 1 yard play. And he's out in the open field with a defender and he stiff arms a guy.
Yeah.
And, he didn't just go down like he kind of said he would go down or go out of bounds and protect himself. And he didn't do any of that. And as luck would have it, or his misfortune would have it recently, the defender stepped on his hand and he had to get his left hand getting examined on the sideline and play the rest of the game with his thumb wrapped. It wasn't a big thing, but again, he didn't show particularly great judgment in terms of getting down, getting out of bounds and not taking a hit. Instead, he took the guy on again, which is the same way, he got hurt against the Giants to some degree.
Yeah, I think that's a hard.
And you know what? CeeDee Lamb after the game was very critical of that. He said, I don't want to see my quarterback running. We don't need Dak to be doing that. But the owner wants him to do it. Dak's competitive instincts get the best of him. And so apologies to CeeDee Lamb. I don't think there's any stopping Dak Prescott.
No. And by the way, on CeeDee's behalf, I think Dak would like to see his receiver going for the ball across the middle.
I think that was on Dak more than that was on CeeDee Lamb.
I don't know.
And I think Dak even said, he did it twice last week in his first game back and kind of forced it. But he also said, hey, I communicated with CeeDee that, hey, I trust you And that might not be the last time I throw that ball. So be ready for it. We might need that play at some point during the season going forward.
Yeah, he didn't look to my eye as extremely competitive going for that ball, CD, but it probably was more on Dak than anybody. It is Ed Werder, Doomsday Podcast, just moments after the game we taped this. I mentioned Maribel Holmes earlier in the broadcast. You can find him on Twitter at Maribel Holmes. I love driving around these neighborhoods looking at the homes that are going up, and it's just gorgeous. Family-owned custom home builder building timeless classic homes in the Dallas area. Great team equipped to handle luxury residential new construction. And then, Ed, also, I want to mention another one of our sponsors, Lakeside Roofing, family-owned full-service roofing company serving the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Weather's changing. It's getting a little cooler. Just beautiful. Now, we had huge rains the other day. Get yourself a new roof. People have leaks and all that kind of stuff. That rain, it never just rains around here. It's torrential floods every time it does. The highest quality roofing products paired with the highest quality workmanship. That's Lakeside Roofing Company. Now, here's how you get a hold of them. It's lakesideroofco.com, lakesideroofco.com, or you can find them on Twitter at lakesiderooftx. Ed, when's the last time you put a, and I'm talking about your home that's in this area, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, when's the last time you put a new roof on?
I personally have never hammered nails into my roof, but I believe I had an insurance situation after one of these recent storms, maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
And we got our roof replaced at little or no cost.
Okay. I had somebody drive by your house the other day and said it was a couple of shingles had fallen off. So I was thinking.
I have had some people who have wanted to climb up on my roof and evaluate it for me, but I figure as soon as that's up there, they're not coming down until they're at about 10 grand.
Lakeside is just, they are so reasonable and do such an incredible job, and it looks so great. I love the colors and everything that they do. All right, Ed, also, and I alluded to this, game changes all of a sudden. And part of it was that interception we were talking about, makes it 28-17 at the half. And then if Chicago doesn't come out and get that, and it wasn't people were like, oh, they get the ball. We always think that now. You get the ball in third quarter. Oh, my gosh, they got a chance. It's going to be big. Well, they didn't do anything. They go three and out. Well, the Cowboys suddenly had to punt again. They get the ball back the second possession of the half and make it 28-23. Ed, at that point, were you kind of shaking your head like, wow, never saw the old Chicago Bears getting themselves back into this one?
Well, they've got a new coach in Matt Eberflus, and he's a first-year head coach, you know, former Dallas assistant for 7 years, mostly under Rod Marinelli and Jason Garrett. And I think they showed what they were capable of last week. I mean, that was a monumental win for them to go up to New England and dominate that game, really from start to finish. They gave up a couple of quick touchdowns to Bailey Zappi. But they really dominated that game, and it's tough. They were in a really tough situation to have to go play at New England on a Monday night, then turn around and come play at Dallas on noon on Sunday, 6 days later. That's not a schedule very many teams are forced to honor. And so I think they came in a decided disadvantage in that regard. And I think they're just starting to figure out how to use Justin Fields. I think the game he had today was probably better than the game he had in New England. You know, I talked to Eberflus about the fact that they had a kind of a mini bye before the New England game. And what they did was they did a lot of self-scouting and evaluation. And he told me they looked at tape from the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens, the Philadelphia Eagles, and even the Houston Texans with Deshaun Watson, and tried to incorporate that into building the right offense for Justin Fields, who's not a drop back passer. I mean, Eberflus told me we don't want him to be in a situation where he's a drop back passer in this game. And they really never did give into that. His running remained a part of it. They ran for 200 yards in this game. Dan Quinn's not going to be a happy man for the next 2 weeks. They traded for Jonathan Hankins from the Raiders, who's supposed to be, you know, one of the best run stoppers in football. And yet the Bears had a 200-yard rushing game for the third time this year. So that's got to be a concern going forward. But yeah, I thought the Bears, they refused to give in. They remain competitive, and I'm not terribly surprised by that, knowing Matt Eberflus the way I do.
Yeah, the only downside about the Cowboys winning this game is if the Bears had have completed that comeback and won the game, Ed Eberflus probably would have jumped on with us after the game, don't you think? He probably would have wanted to be on Doomsday. We like Matt Eberflus. Ed created, as he does, forged a great relationship with him. And so it was always good to kind of get some inside scoop from Eberflus. But good for him. I hope he kind of hangs in there, because some of these first-time coaches, like your man Hackett, although I do think they won today. Boy, he was
trending. They did. They won in London. They wouldn't... Denver wouldn't let him play at home anymore. They had to go to London to prove that they're going to be competitive. And maybe now they'll let him play in the Mile High City again, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's ride.
Boy, I love it when you say let's ride. And we may start every podcast with that. It is. And Ed, there's some more I want to get to, but we do need real quick to get to something. And I want to get his take. And of course, I can get your take as well. We'll talk to Stretch. I want to ask him about that touchdown celebration where Ferguson gets the 1 yard touchdown catch and then lassos Dalton Schultz in kind of a calf roping, steer roping type situation. For an old rodeo guy like me from Kaufman, Texas, that was good to see. You're from Colorado, Ed. Did you go to the rodeo growing up any? Because Colorado's kind of out on the prairie in a sense.
I've been to the Great Western Stock Show a time or two. Yeah. I saw rodeo up in Cheyenne Frontier days. So I'm familiar with it. And actually, it was kind of odd for, I don't know, maybe 6 months. Miss Jill here at the house was really into the professional bull riders rodeo. And like, she couldn't go past it on the channels. When she'd get the clicker and at late at night go past it, she'd find bull riding. And that's what we were watching for the next hour. She loved the stories about the steer and the bulls and the riders. And so, yeah, I'm familiar with it. I was not a big fan of that particular celebration, but I'm glad it appealed to somebody.
Is that that phase that Jill was asking you to wear chaps around the house? Okay.
No, I got nothing to say to that. Next question.
All right. Let's get to Stretch Plays with Glenn Stretch Smith. Stretch, good to see you this evening. I am Cowboys come out and they win this thing going away. It was a strange game in the sense that Chicago did kind of climb back into it. The Cowboys had some quick answers, though. The overall offense, the offensive game plan, and just the first, you know, they've had some success early in games, but to go score, 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 and to be up 28-7. Just I just like this year. You've had some good thoughts on Kellen Moore. I even noticed, some of the 11 personnel, the 12 personnel. Boy, they'll mix it up every once in a while. Get about three tight ends in there. I may have even seen some 13 personnel. What was your overall takeaway from how the offense functioned today?
Well, when you look at how Kellen Moore is calling the game, to me, he looks in sync. He looks comfortable with Dak right now. I think there would be some time right there where you want to get used and get those guys used to working with one another. You made mention of the personnel groups. I'll tell you what I thought was interesting, too, is they came out and really went hurry up in that first series where they went down and scored. They didn't huddle. They were in and out. They knew what they wanted to do. They felt strong about what they wanted to do. I loved the second play action skinny post that he ran to CeeDee Lamb for the second touchdown. I'm seeing things to me that Kellen Moore is almost saying, you know what, I've got to do what I've got to do here, instead of feeling like he had to, you know, out-cute somebody or, you know, have a reverse scheme or call the right play right at the right time. he's taking advantage of what he's got with his quarterback. He's taking advantage of what he's got with his running back. And you mentioned the tight ends. I would have never bet you that Peyton Hendershot could come in here and do some of the things that he's doing. Ferguson doing some of the things that he's doing, and obviously the comfort level that the quarterback has with Schultz. I think what I liked as much as anything about today that I saw, though, was an offensive line. When you full zone block an offensive line, that means nobody's pulling. That means everybody is full zone running off the football. To me, that tells you how physical they are. Excuse me. And I'm seeing a physical group. I'm seeing a group that is stepping off the ball, getting to the second level, and getting after people up front. And I think that's the most impressive thing about what I saw with the Dallas offense, was how they were doing things offensively.
All right, and boy, I love the acoustics where Stretch is. He's always either at his home studio or sometimes at WFAA. Stretch, I did think on that one pass to Ferguson, I thought, boy, I bet Stretch loves that lasso touchdown celebration when Ferguson did a little lasso and then he tied up Schultz there, kind of did him like an old doggy you'd see at the rodeo. Would you give that an A, the touchdown celebration there?
No, I wouldn't. I've seen Allen do that, the defensive end, back when he was with the Vikings. So if it had had anything, a new flair to it, I would have said okay. But I've seen many guys get steer rope or calf rope and tied up. So no, Mosley, I wouldn't enamored by that at all. I'm more enamored by your black Baylor jacket. And again, you look like a mutt on a Sunday evening here when we're doing something for the Cowboys. You've got the stinking ass. You're worried about the Bears. It's just ridiculous.
No, I mean, I think,
and you're getting an F for wearing a black jacket, Mosley.
No, I think the pullover is very pleasant after the first win in Lubbock since 1990 last night. Great win for the Bears. I will say, Stretch, that the Pollard game, that was big, and that was a big story with Jerry, and Jerry had to kind of remind everybody, we live and die with Zeke, but this was one more reminder that when given enough opportunities, and he had 14 carries, it just seemed like a lot more since we're not used to seeing him get a whole lot of carries. He was dynamic, just kept getting in the end zone. 54-yard run. This is a home run hitter. What would you? I can't imagine you not giving Tony Pollard an A, and then even his understudy. I thought Malik came in there and Malik Davis and did a really nice job.
Yeah, no question. You got to give the running back an A. And you made a great point right there. Is that the thing that that makes Pollard dynamic? And I talked about this, is when you full zone block it, there were two different times. It's him and the safety. That's the guy you don't have enough to block. And so when you can make that guy miss, it's big runs. And he made him miss today. And it really was, to me, those are the things that at times Zeke does not have that. He does not have that little shake to make the safety miss and take it to the house. Zeke's a different kind of runner. Zeke's more of a hammer. Zeke's more of a downhill kind of ISO lead runner. But when you see what Pollard did, and again, that's why I'm giving Kellen Moore a lot of credit. He was able to make that safety miss. I'm giving Moore credit because he's doing what he needs to do to put his players in position to be successful. And Zeke's not a great zone runner, but man, they called that zone today, and you can see where Pollard was able to cut it loose. I think he averaged over 9 yards a run, and I mean that's impressive when you're getting that kind of push up front.
He did extremely well, and to your point, there was one move he put on poor Eddie Jackson, and Jackson looks so bad in space, and it just there's just a different pace, there's a different wiggle to it. That doesn't mean there's not a place for Zeke. But it just, this is the back that scares teams the most now. Zeke can still lean on you, but I think that's great. So I like that you talked about the O-line. Really good day for the tight ends. There was one drive, in fact. I was looking at one particular drive. Might have been that second drive. That was a Hendershot Schultz for 8, Schultz for another 7. And then of course they got Gallup. They kept getting Gallup on those little slants, and that looked good because Gallup had not been involved in the game plan last week, or they didn't throw it to him, and that was good to see Gallup get involved. So I think you saw, even without Noah Brown, who's been very valuable, the offense functioned extremely well. Let's flip over there to the defense, and Stretch, I did want to get your take on, you're always good perspective on this kind of thing, how much the Bears, the number one running team in the league, went for over 200 against the Cowboys. And boy, Herbert's a good runner. Armstrong, the guy from, where'd he come from? Iowa State, I think. I mean, they've got some really good running backs, and they ended up putting up a big total. How much of that, in your mind, was just by nature of it being a big score most of the time or a big deficit, and how much concern would that give you?
Well, I mean, first of all, Hooker was inactive, right? He's the other, what I would call, real hammer in the secondary, along with Wilson, as far as a guy that you can bring down in the box and be able to play that 8-in-the-box look. The thing that I think Chicago is dynamic with it, and I probably underestimated this kid a little bit. I mean, Fields can really run. I mean, and he looks good running the football, and he's very comfortable running the football. When you saw them score that touchdown, they almost ran a double crack down there where they cracked the two outside guys, pulled the tackle, kicked him out, and it was a walk-in touchdown. To me, that's what makes it dynamic, and that's what's going to keep them being the Bears in this thing. I do think they're a really good they're a good zone read team. And does it concern me some? Not really, because again, when I know that Hooker was out, when I know you were having a rotation of guys run in that secondary, you know, Wilson got banged up some. I think we saw Bland have to play some at nickel. So I believe those are things that you can get cleaned up. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I think makes it so dynamic again, guys, is when the quarterback can run the football, and he can run the football like Fields can run it. I mean, that can give you some real problems. Now, you know, I know the direction that it's going to go. Well, you know, the next time they play Jalen Hurts, I mean, Hurts runs the ball just as good as Fields, and may throw it a little better, and yes, he may. But I also think that when you look at how the Cowboys are rolling, constantly rolling defensive linemen in there, and they're doing that because they want that upfield pressure, they want to be able to get in those gaps, pin their ears back, and get after you. That's what makes the defense, I think, really give – other people problems is their pass rush. I continue to say, give me a strong pass rush, Mosley, and you can fix the run game. We'll do a better job with our fits and with what we need to do from a run game standpoint. You saw one time they ran the zone read look, and literally Lawrence is unblocked, and he takes kind of a bad angle.
Yeah.
And Fields pulls the ball and gets up outside of him. Those are the kind of things that can happen. But until you're practicing at full speed, I think it's really hard to emulate that in practice. It's not like Cooper Rush can go out there and run the scout team and be able to outrun Lawrence around the edge. So I think it's good that they got to see that. I think you can – those are teaching moments. And I know that Dan Quinn will use that from a teaching perspective. I thought that roughing the passer call on Golston was kind of a chicken crap call. I mean, he had his hands up. It wasn't like he went in there and really went at Fields. I'm not going to ding him for that. I mean, you know, what keeps the defense from getting an A is the fact that they give up, you know, the 200 yards of rushing. But does it concern me? And back to your question, it does not concern me, because I do think that Dallas that the off week is coming at a right time for the Cowboys. They're going to go to Green Bay. I believe they handle business. I believe you see an off week, and I believe you see a team that makes a big time second half push to go and catch, you know, the Eagles, who right now they're two games back of.
All right, Cowboys heading into the bye week, 6-2 now. I had the right school. I don't know if I said the right player. That's David Montgomery is the other running back for the Bears, and comes in there kind of a fire plug guy, 5'11", 224. But it was the other running back who was really running for a lot of yards. That was one of the huge plays in the game. And another, just the Micah Parsons continues to amaze us, Stretch. And you've seen a lot in your years at coaching in college and the NFL. But when you see Micah Parsons rush the passer, turn around, race down a play like that from behind, pick up the ball, and then have the presence of mind to know he wasn't touched, run it all the way back in for whatever that was, 38-yard fumble return. Those are things that sort of make him one of the greatest players in the game today, offense or defense.
Well, I mean, that's one of the clips that if you're coaching, and I don't care at what level, you just take that clip and you put it on, and that's exactly how you want a guy to play. He's up the field into a double team block. He sees the ball thrown. He turns and takes the correct angle. He goes and chases the football. He gets in on the play. The ball comes out. Like you said, I mean, he picks it up and goes and scores with it. I mean, that's every single thing from a coaching perspective on the defensive side of the ball that you want. I mean, he is playing hard. He's getting after it. And you love the play. Here's what I continue to say, though. They have a rotation, and this is what's going to make the Cowboys so dangerous, is they have a rotation of guys. I mean, they traded for the defensive tackle from the Raiders. They can just keep rolling these guys in there. And when you're chasing the football like that, that's exactly the kind of play that – I mean, those are exactly the kind of plays that happen. And I'm sure those are the kind of things that Dan Quinn and his defensive staff are going to feed on. And, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's awesome to watch. It's fun to watch. And he is a dynamic player and somebody that's, I think, going to be great in this organization for a long time.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up that Bland coming in, Deron Bland, because he makes a play down there in the red zone, around the end zone. When he had to come in, he was pressed into duty. And I thought that was a really good play. You saw Kelvin Joseph, and he made some news this week because he talked for the first time in a long time. And he got beat on a play in the end zone. He's more of a special teams ace. You know, you're going to have to get beat some, and you're going to have to get thrown into the mix, and he's in the mix right now. And we're going to just have to see how he performs. But I think that one play I'm thinking about, Stretch, they kind of question the leverage that he was playing. Like I think that might have been that N'Keal Harry touchdown, to where they gave him a really sort of easy on an out. They just didn't have any chance on making a play on that ball.
Well, you're talking about the touchdown to Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I remember that right, I'm not trying to correct you here. It was a deep over. And so anytime you run that over, you're right. The leverage was an issue, but I can tell you that most times guys want to keep inside leverage, like you were saying, so you make the guy have to go outside, but it's really hard to do. And N'Keal Harry's a big physical receiver, and anytime you get I'm going to go back to this because it really is something that I'm trying to hammer home. When you can throw those deep overs, that requires time. And they had a hard time doing it the Bears from time to time. Those were the sacks. But when you do get the protection, it's hard. It's really hard to stay with that guy on that deep over. So, we'll see how that plays out. But you're right. They're going to have to play these. They're going to have to play some guys that maybe are not as comfortable playing when you do have the injuries that the Cowboys have in the secondary right now, and you have a you know, you got a 16, 17 game season, you got to be able to, some other guys have got to step in and play. And that's what Bland did. And you saw that tonight. So I do think the bye week is really coming at the right time for the Cowboys here.
All right, Stretch, good work. We'll be watching you on Sunday nights, Channel 8, with Joe Trahan and the gang, and Mike Leslie and everybody involved, Rebecca Lopez, on Mondays. And that's always good to watch as well. And I'm concerned, by the way, that you didn't love that lasso celebration. It took me back to my younger days, going to the Mesquite Rodeo, in watching all that, and a great Western flair, especially for the Cowboys, a beautiful celebration. Jared Allen did it his own way. Let's let Jake Ferguson, let's let him be himself. And
I'm with you. I mean, if that's the way you feel, and you've got your Johnny Cash outfit on, so you're in full Western mode right now. So you're the man in black, and good for you.
Yeah.
I understand you're fired up about where we're at from a Western culture standpoint. So
yeah.
I'm glad to see you're buying in, Mosley.
You used to go to Shepler's up there. Then we'd go over to that place that had the big slide and they'd cut your necktie, the little steakhouse over there.
You know what, Mosley? You know what? I can see you. I can see you in a pair of those Wrangler jeans so tight that if you farted, you'd sprain both ankles. That'd be a good look on you.
Fredo, can we cut that last part? All right, Stretch, I appreciate you. There he goes. He's just kind of going right off into the sunset. It is Glenn Stretch Smith with Stretch Plays. Okay, Doomsday's his first love, but he also, we send him out there like Ed, and he does TV and has a nice sport coat that he gets out every now and then. Ed, after the Bears made it 28-23, I thought that next drive from the Cowboys was a real, like when we point back to big moments in the season, I mean, there'll be several we can point to, but that was a great answer. It was 3rd and 9, and Cowboys were at their own 26, and Dak throws a beautiful ball to Dalton Schultz. That ends up going for 30 yards and just hits him in stride, and Schultz and Hendershot and Ferguson, they all played well. But that 30-yard pass to Dalton Schultz, that was a big answer. And then it was like boom, boom, boom. They punch it in and get it to 35-23. And that was just a great answer after the Bears had come all the way back from being down 28-7 to make it 28-23.
Well, you know, yeah. But I think offensively, the most important thing for the Cowboys was the way they started the game. 4 straight, you know, possessions with a touchdown, something that they had never done with Dak Prescott as a quarterback. The last time they had done it was 2 years before they drafted him. So to kind of get the offense rolling, I thought that was important. You know, they showed some new ideas. They went up tempo. They didn't huddle. They really attacked the Bears and didn't give them a chance to regroup in any way. We talked about the creativity that they had. You know, Kellen Moore showed with Tony Pollard as the primary running back. CeeDee Lamb was in the backfield several times. You know, Kevontae Turpin had his best run. So I think they were just a lot more imagination was shown in this particular game plan. And then, like you said, even after they assembled this huge lead and the Bears would refuse to go away, whenever the Bears did make it close, the Cowboys had sort of a ready response to it and really never lost control of the game, really throughout the entire 4 quarters, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah. Slipping away in my mind, but that was a great answer. You're right. That was an imaginative game plan. Now, so they make it 35-23. And Bears facing a long 3rd down, and they actually get it out there, and it's they're going to get somewhere close to a 1st down. Van Der Esch pursues the play, forces the fumble, and you'll like this, Ed, this Micah Parsons, this unbelievable play that he makes. And of course, Justin Fields was a big part of this for not touching him down and leaping over him. But Frito Nation Productions, Mark Frito Friedman and myself and I, we have done some next-gen type stats. And on that particular play, Micah Parsons, in pursuing the quarterback, turning around, then pursuing the play from behind, then picking up the ball and having the presence of mind to know the play is not over, and then racing for the 38-yard return, we have him going 60 yards, running 60 yards on that one play, showing incredible effort. And that was a pretty amazing.
Unfortunately, do not. Next-gen stats came up with a different number.
Do not.
They credit him with a 92 yards worth of running, the fourth greatest amount of yardage covered on a defensive touchdown this year. 92 yards. Micah Parsons' first touchdown. And as far as presence of mind, he said after the game that he thought he was down. He kind of jumped up and was going to celebrate with his teammates that he had come up with his fumble. And instead, they were yelling, go, go, go. And so he said, I went. And that's how he scored. And the funny thing about it after the game was both Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott responded the same exact way when they were asked about that play, both saying, we will never hear now the end of his campaigning to play a role on offense. Like McCarthy said, he's going to be in my office all week during a bye week, wanting us to come up with a role for him on offense because he was a high school running back.
Yeah,
and that was his first touchdown. It was a great play. And it was not unlike the play last week where he seemed out of the play and ran down the Lions tight end at the half yard line, tackled him, and set up the next one more play that led to DeMarcus Lawrence creating a fumble and a turnover on the Dallas 1 yard line, kind of saved the game. And he talked about, you know, all the meetings he had with Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator, during that week, and that Quinn kept emphasizing to him his superpower is to be relentless and to pursue every play even when you think you're out of it. And he's done that 2 weeks in a row, 1 week saving a touchdown, and today scoring a touchdown on a run while running somewhere between the calculations of 60 yards that you and Frito came up with or the 92 yards that Next Gen Stats came up with. I probably tend to side with you guys.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. 92 seems a little high, but we can return to the tape. We might have in his pursuit of the quarterback, we may have shorted him about 10 to 15 yards there. But
I'm
just talking about that one phase of the play. That was where I think we shorted him the most yards. But it was an amazing effort play. And he continues week after week to do things that kind of shock us. And then on top of that, Ed, they brought in Hankins. It was interesting to see him. I mean, that move may even motivate Gallimore. They tried to say that, no, him being inactive was more about him being banged up. It wasn't about his poor play. But they have not been as high on him recently, and Odigizuwa's at Golston got called for a unnecessary roughness or, you know, on the quarterback.
Roughing the passer.
Yeah, I don't I'd have to.
Negated a Trayvon Diggs interception, would have been his fourth
correct
of the year.
Yeah, and I, for whatever reason, Fox did not give us good replays on that, and so I don't know in real time if you caught that. It, to me, it just was one of those where they're like, well, I guess he kind of went up high and we got to call something. It did not, to the naked eye, looking at it live and even on replay, didn't look like he did that much. But, Ed, I think we've arrived at the point where you just almost can't do anything back there. And if
I called it a new era roughing the passer penalty. And it wasn't even the most questionable call of the game, in my opinion. The Cowboys lost another turnover. Remember when they ruled that Khalil Herbert's knee was down when his knee was nowhere close to down when he lost possession of the ball on a play that Leighton Vander Esch seemed to have recovered a fumble on. And that continued a possession for the Bears that resulted in a touchdown. Well, I mean, I don't see how in the world they went to replay and determined that his knee was down when he was standing on both feet at the time.
Yeah, because
he lost control of the ball.
It's a call that happened the week before. It's because they ruled that he repossessed the ball. It was absolutely coming out on the way down. What they're saying is that before that, I mean, before that knee hit the ground or whatever, he repossessed the ball and had it. I mean, I realize it's strange, but it happened the week before. And so the ruling is that he did fumble it, but he repossessed it before he got the ball back again.
I don't know. I thought I saw Leighton Vander Esch hold it up and walk it to his trophy case at home. But, you know, I don't know how Khalil Herbert got possession of it if Leighton Vander Esch was putting it in the trophy case.
Again, what I'm saying is he repossessed it, and then the knee was down, and then the ball came out. Okay. I like it. Ed's got that as bogus. Ed's been out there for several hours. See if there's anything else we need to cover here. That was a huge play by Micah in the game, and then obviously they poured it on and end up winning 49-29. They now go into the bye. It's a great way to go into the bye, 6-2. Eagles were having a little trouble early in that game. They end up winning, going away. Giants, as we record this, just lost, and so Cowboys will see them a couple of games down the road, although the Giants' next two games are against teams that have a combined like two wins, and then they see the Cowboys. Cowboys will come out of the bye, Ed, and then they face the Packers, and that's going to be a lot of build-up to that one because that'll be the first time Mike McCarthy has gone back since being fired, and so there'll be a lot of interesting sidebars to that one. I mean, I don't think you could be in better shape going to the bye. You got to rest Zeke. Pollard has a great game. The young back, Malik Davis, did fine. There were some people banged up during the game. I wouldn't say there was anything that Donovan Wilson, it looked to be cramps. He came back. Kearse seemed to be banged up at points during the game. Hooker didn't play in this game. But I don't, Ed, there was nothing that would like really, you know, like the Jordan Lewis, really bad injury. There was nothing coming out of this game, I think, unless I'm missing something, that would be of huge concern.
Yeah, no, I think, since Jerry Jones bought the franchise in 1989, the Cowboys have started 6-2 or better now 11 times, and they've made the playoffs each previous time. And in many of those years, the playoff field wasn't as big as it is now, so it wasn't as easy as it is now. I just think, from a big picture point of view, that, the Cowboys scored a season high 49 points. That's 30 more than they had averaged this season. And they get to the bye week and with a 6-2 record. I mean, how many teams have? I think the Eagles are the only team to have more than six wins. The Vikings maybe the Vikings are there, but they did this with Dak Prescott and Michael Gallup missed five games. Dalton Schultz missed multiple games, and today Ezekiel Elliott misses a game. I just think that maybe Mike McCarthy and his crisis management skills haven't gotten enough attention. We've paid a lot of attention to Dan Quinn and what he's done on the defensive side of the ball today. We praise Kellen Moore for his play, creative play calling. But, overall, I think you got to recognize what Mike McCarthy's done, and it'll be interesting to see how they play in Green Bay, because that's going to be a game of great personal interest to the Cowboys head coach in 2 weeks. One of the most anticipated games, I think, on the entire NFL schedule, because McCarthy experienced the euphoria of winning a Super Bowl with the 2016 Packers and then suffered the indignity of being fired in the middle of the 2018 season. Still has a home up in Green Bay, has a street named after him in Green Bay. It'll be a fascinating situation. They got 2 weeks to prepare to be at their best for a game that means everything to their head coach and will open the second half of their season.
Yeah, and the Packers by then could fall after tonight's game 2-3-5, and so their season could be in turmoil, and either way, no matter what their record is, they're going to be desperate for a win, and so it's going to be a big game. Lots of interesting plot lines to that. Ed has already been assigned that ball game, and so Ed will be in the land, and Ed, you can return to that place where you and I had our fabled dinner on a snowy night the night before that 2007 NFC title game. Maybe you can return to that place. Do you remember the name of that place? It's a steakhouse.
Wasn't it the Hotel Dupierre or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Sounds about right. I told McCarthy in August when they were scrimmaging in Denver, I said, hey, I just bought my plane ticket for Green Bay and it was $1,700. And he said, wait till you see what they charge you for the hotel. He knows what it's like on Packer weekend in Green Bay with lodging.
Yeah, we always stayed in Appleton, right down the road, and they had a great bar called the Wooden Nickel. We'd hang out there a little bit and then make our way on. In fact, before one of those games, Ed, when I think it was before Romo had become the starter, and of course he was returning home. Maybe he was playing by then, but that night before the game, Todd Haley arrived at the bar and a few other coaches, and that was kind of fun to hang out and get out and about because the team, I think, was staying there in Appleton. All right, that is it for the Doomsday Podcast. Ed, good work, as always. Enjoy your bye week. Are they going to send you somewhere during the bye week?
No bye week for me, buddy.
Oh, man.
I'm going to go watch the undefeated Eagles, cover the undefeated Eagles at the Texans on Thursday night. And
wow.
I, just as we were recording this, got a text from my boss asking me if I was available to do Sunday night football, Titans at Kansas City, Arrowhead Stadium. So
wow.
Get to see a couple of the best teams in football, the Eagles and the Chiefs.
Man, I tell you, and I guess it'll be a little weird to do this, but I'm planning to do Doomsday Podcast from both of those games.
You got it. I'll be calling you.
Okay. All right. For
what's my per diem?
Exactly. Ed Werder, Mark Frito Friedman, and Frito Nation Productions. I am Matt Mosley. We're saying goodnight from far north Dallas. This has been the Doomsday Podcast.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.